And it's 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 21 to 51. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." David asked the man standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." When Eliab, David's eldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." "Now what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go out and fight him." Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he's been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord, who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around, but he wasn't used to them. "I can't go in these," he said to Saul, "because I'm not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in a pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and to the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you, all of you, into our hands. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. May the Lord bless his word.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Oh, you know that one. Coming to the story of David and Goliath is a bit like going to a comedy convention, a stand-up comedian's convention, and just being told to tell that joke and make it funny. Because everybody knows it. Everybody has learned about David and Goliath since you were this big. And so it's hard sometimes to come back to a passage that is so well known and try to look at it with fresh eyes. Try to look at it with a new spirit. And I encourage you to do that today because it's an important story. It's a story that has a message for us today, whether you own a sling or not. It's a message of faith. It's a message of righteousness. It's a message about what do we do when we need to bring down giants. See, there was a problem in Israel, and the problem was this challenge from a big, blasphemous giant. His name was Goliath, and he was big. He was almost 10 feet tall, 9 feet 9, as the Bible tells us. That means he could slam dunk a basketball without jumping. He was big. His armor weighed more than I do. Between his armor and his helmet and his spear, he weighed more than two of me. And then there was him, of course. And then there was his armor bearer who went in front of him and carried a shield. He was intimidating. That wasn't the biggest problem, though. The biggest problem was that nobody would stand up to him. Nobody would face him down. Nobody would call his bluff. Nobody. Nobody in Israel. Now remember who was king in Israel at this time, King Saul. You remember how big he was. He was chosen. He was elected by the people as king. Now, God knew it would happen, but he was elected by the people as king because he was head and shoulders above all the others. He was already a big man. And he was supposed to lead them in battle. And he was supposed to be their king. They wanted a king because all the other nations had kings, and it was peer pressure that drove them to having a king in the first place. God had told them, you really don't need any other king than me. But you've chosen to take a king. And it turns out he was a coward. Imagine the disappointment of that. Saul is way away from Goliath. He doesn't like to go near the big guy. So nobody is going to stand up to him. If Saul won't stand up to him, then certainly nobody else will stand up to him. Of course, some of that might have been to do because this mess was all Saul's fault anyway, in the first place. This war with the Philistines didn't need to happen. But Jonathan, Saul's son, had sort of started a skirmish, and the skirmish turned into a battle, and the battle turned into a war, and Saul, foolishly, hadn't seen it through when he had the chance. So the Philistines could have been dealt with in chapter 16. But they weren't. And that was actually Saul's fault. What do you do with a big problem like that? A big problem that doesn't seem to want to go away. A giant in your life that's mocking you and taunting you and saying, "Ha, you can't do anything about me." The Israelites were already defeated. 17:24 tells us that they were afraid. The war was already over as far as they were concerned. Nobody was going to come out and fight Goliath. Nobody was going to deal with this problem that seemed to refuse to go away. They were already beaten. But they were seeing from a physical perspective. Look at verse 25. And thank you, by the way, for the reading. It was very nicely read. You brought us right into the story, and so that's helpful for me. Verse 25, the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his father's family from taxes in Israel." I bet that ransom wasn't, or not ransom, I bet that prize, that bounty, wasn't all laid out in front of them at once. I'll bet Saul said at first, "I need a volunteer." And when nobody volunteered, I'll bet Saul said, "I'll give money. I'll give money to a volunteer who'll come and stand off against this man." No takers. "Okay, I'll give one of my daughters in marriage and the money." No takers. "Okay, I need more bait. I will give that man's family, his father and his household, tax exemption for the rest of their lives. We will not extract a levy from them ever again. He can keep all his money." Now that, you would think, would get some attention. I mean, today, you'd get people standing up and say, me. But no, that wasn't good enough. Nobody would rise to the bait. They were already beaten. They were already intimidated. They were already afraid. And all of them knew that if I go out and face that big lug, I will not come back. That was the propaganda. But David, when he comes into this story, he's not looking through physical eyes. He's not just looking at a big man. He's not just looking even at a big warrior. He's looking at a sin. He's looking at someone, something that is outside the covenant of God. That's why he keeps coming back to him and calling him this uncircumcised Philistine. He's not just making fun of him. He's saying this man is outside of the covenant people. This man is against God. This man is an outsider and he doesn't belong. That's why David keeps coming back to the fact that he's an uncircumcised Philistine. He's pointing out that this big lug is actually outside of God's covenant promises. He's outside of the will of God, which in our terminology today means he is sin. And David is careful to see things through spiritual eyes. He's not just a big lug who is intimidating and taunting Israel. He's a big lug who's intimidating and taunting the Israel of God. He sees the spiritual connection. This isn't just a battle between two armies. This isn't just a fight of champions that's being called out. This is actually an affront against the supremacy, the sovereignty, the righteousness of the God of Israel. David sees it as a spiritual insult. He is indignant, not for himself or even for his people. He's indignant for his God. How dare he challenge the God of Israel? How dare he challenge the God of the universe, the one true God? He is spiritually indignant. The giant was sin personified. He was sin walking around on two big legs. Armor-plated sin. That's what he represents to us today. And David's having none of it. David isn't intimidated by him at all. He sees through spiritual eyes, and he calls it just as he sees it. He's not a mighty warrior. He's not fearsome. He's just against God. And that's all. And therefore, he must be dealt with. He's just against God, and therefore, he needs to be done away with. He calls it what it is. He calls it as he sees it. Now, this thing about David's brother, Eliab, verse 29, no, verse 28. When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here?" Well, David could have said, "Because Dad told me to." "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert?" Minimizing the little brother. Just making his life trivial. "Oh, you know, you left a few sheep in the desert to come down here and watch the battle. You're just a little voyeur. You want to see bloodshed." That's what he thinks his motive is. He thinks David is being childish. "I know how conceited you are," says Big Brother, "and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." Now, the way verse 29 reads, I want to switch the word order a little bit because I think this is a better way to read this sentence. "What have I done now?" That's actually a more accurate rendering of what's happening in the Hebrew text here. "What have I done now?" And we've all heard ourselves say that. What have I done now? I'm in trouble again. All I came down, all I did was obey Dad, bring cheeses for the captain, bring bread for you guys, and now there's this big oaf. He's challenging our God, and I'm calling him on it. That's all. And yet, here you are, up in my face about it. What have I done now? I'm just talking. Can't I even speak? So he turned around and he started talking to some other people about the same matter, and the men answered him as the same as before. David's words get back to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one," I love this tongue-in-cheek remark from David. This is so funny. Saying it to Saul's face. "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." David's not fazed a bit because David knows spiritually what's going on. God is being challenged. And when God is challenged, God is perfectly capable of defending himself. God is perfectly capable of taking care of any challenge that is launched against him. Don't ever lose sight of that fact. David didn't lose sight of that fact. "You're just a boy," Saul intimates. "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy. And he's been a fighting man since he was a boy. He's tough. He's disciplined. He's battle-toned. You won't come back alive, David. David said to Saul, I've been keeping my father's sheep. And wild animals quite often come against the sheep. That's just the way of the shepherd boy. And I've always been able to deal with them. I've been able to deal with the lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. I've been able to deal with them. God, and this is important, has preserved me. God has kept me safe against the lion and the bear. God has defended me. God has fought for me. God has been at my side. God has kept me alive. Perhaps for a moment such as this. And my God will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. It's kind of a hollow blessing, isn't it? From Saul, the coward king, go and the Lord be with you. And then Saul, this is a fascinating little piece of the story. Saul tries to get David, now remember, Saul, head and shoulders above the others, tries to get David, the youngest boy, to put on his armor. Head and shoulders above the rest, little shepherd boy. And of course, it turns into a little bit of a farce. You know, they dress him up in Saul's armor, and he's teetering around like this, you know. And he says, the text reads, I can't go out like this. I think it really means, I can't go like this. He couldn't move. A little lad in a huge man's armor wasn't going to work. But why did Saul even try? Why did Saul say, take my armor, knowing that it would never fit? Well, if the boy was successful, if by some fluke the boy pulled it off, then Saul would get some of the credit. Oh, yeah, he was using my armor. Yeah, my luck rubbed off on him. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had the spirit of Saul, the warrior, with him because he was wearing Saul the warrior's armor. Take a little credit, snatch a little glory, just in case. It was ego insurance for Saul. If he gets away with it, then at least I'll still get some of the credit. David's having nothing of it. He knows he's going to be useless in that armor. He can't move. He can't go in that armor. David relies on God's providence, and he remembers God's providence all too well. He's been living under God's providence all his life, tending sheep for his dad. He's sustained me in the past. I trust him to sustain me in the future, and I'm going to go with what I know. Here are the tools that I'm comfortable with. Here is what I've grown up amongst. A sling, a few stones, and a good staff. Now, I made a sling once for a presentation built around this story, and I got quite good with it. And it's quite a formidable weapon once you come to terms with it. You'll put a stone in it, in a full-blown sling, a real one, not a little toy sling, but in a full-blown sling, you'll put a stone in it about the size of a snooker ball. It's good and heavy. And you'll swing it around a couple of times, and with a little bit of practice, I was hitting a tree at 30 yards fairly consistently. I brought it to the church, to my church in Dallas once, to demonstrate my proficiency, and I said, I'm going to take that clock off the wall. Because pastors never like having that clock at the back wall. And, well, I didn't keep my promise to break the clock, but I demonstrated the usefulness of a sling. And, of course, it's what David's grown up with. It's what he's used to using. It fits his hand perfectly. He's comfortable with it. In fact, long days whiling away the hours out in the fields with the sheep, what else is there to do except practice with your sling and maybe build yourself a little harp out of a sheep's horn, and string that up and compose some songs? It's just what came naturally to him. It was just easy to him because God, in his providence, had been preparing him for that moment to deal with this problem. What's the perfect weapon for today? It's a sling. I don't need Saul's sword. I don't need Saul's helmet. I don't need Saul's armor. I just need what I'm good at. I need what I'm comfortable with. I need what I'm used to. And that's enough with God. He takes 5 stones. I don't know why he took 5. Seems like he only needed the 1. Perhaps he was just being careful. He took his shepherd's rod. He took his 5 stones. And he took his sling. Now, it's the way that David approaches Goliath that is intriguing for me and I hope will be helpful to us. David said to the Philistine, let's go to 45. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. And this day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. And today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air. David is confident. This was going to be a battle of champions. This was going to be a battle of one man on one man to decide the outcome. But David knows that if I can take you, then we will have the Philistine army on the run. If I can just take you, then everything is different. Everything turns around. Everything starts to change. Because God will have the victory. As the Philistine moved closer to attack, verse 48, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. That's it. The fight is on, and we're all ready for this big battle. Lots of sparring and bobbing and weaving and dodging about. And no, none of that. It's such an anticlimax. I mean, it's a good anticlimax, but you wouldn't want to pay a big ticket price to go and see it. It doesn't go 12 rounds. He just runs up to him. Pop! And it's over. Now, he wants to make sure he doesn't come around. He might have only just stunned him. So he runs up to him quickly, unafraid, draws his sword and cuts his head off, just like he promised to do. Now, this is where we stop with the children in Sunday school, isn't it? We don't do the cutting off the head a bit. We don't do the, oh, look at that bit. We don't do the trophy dance bit. We don't do the sticking it on a spike outside of Jerusalem bit. But David did. David wants both the Philistines and the Israelites behind him to remember this day. He takes his trophies. He takes his mementos of God's victory. He takes the sword of Goliath. We should all be taking mementos of the days we have victory. We should all be reminding ourselves constantly about the providence of God. That I've got a house full of clutter. And some of that clutter are folders of cards and letters, thank you notes and things like that, where Rosie or I have done something that has rescued someone from some dreadful situation. Quite often you'll get a thank you card. Thank you, Terry. Your counsel really helped me, and I'm seeing my way clearly now. Thank you, Terry, for coming to help and providing groceries and just sitting and talking. That was a wonderful thing for you to do. Thank you. Little moments of victory, little moments where you realize that God has been honored, and we keep them in what I call an attaboy file. It's just a little file that we can go back to every once in a while when perhaps we're running a little dry, you know, when perhaps we're forgetting how providential God has been in the past and how helpful he's been in our ministry in the past, and we're starting to get a little melancholy, you know, because it's hard work. And we'll go to that attaboy file and we'll break out a few cards or a few letters and we'll just look back over 20, 30 years of ministry. And the times when God has been faithful, the times when God has used us to help someone, to deliver someone, to straighten someone, to tweak someone's conscience, whatever it is, it's nice to have those mementos. You may not be a clutter sort of person. You may not be the sort of person who likes to keep stuff a lot. I am. My wife hates me for it. But these mementos, these treasures, they are important to me. And I'm sure that David took Goliath's sword as a keepsake, as a memento, as a reminder of God's faithfulness that day. It was just confident, quiet faith in David, from David, that won the day. And of course, we know the rest of the story. The Philistines were routed. The Israelites were victorious. David became famous throughout the land as the one who slew the giant. Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. David's reputation really blossomed after this day. But let me ask you what your giants are. What is it in your life today that's taunting you? Something that stands against God in your life and it just doesn't seem to want to go away or shut up. We all have our giants. Sometimes we'll do what the Israelites do and we'll just give them an earthly name. But we need to be honest. We need to be honest to God and call it the way David called it. This is an affront to God. This is an insult to him. This giant that lurks in the corners of my life that I can't seem to do away with. He's mocking my God. Because God has already given me the victory. Aren't we promised that? God has given me the victory already. Victory is mine just as certainly as victory was David's against the giant. And David knew it before he even went out. He said, I've been preserved before. God's been at my side before. And I know he can do it again. And so I'm just going to go and assume that this battle is over. And within 30 seconds, it was. David's faithful confidence in the provision of God is what brought him the victory. God had been preparing him through time. God had been preparing him through his experience to be ready for just that moment, and he seized the day. He did it. Now, when are you going to run to your giant and deal with it, claiming the victory that God has already promised? When are you going to run to your giant? When are you going to deal with that critical spirit? When are you going to deal with that lust problem you have? When are you going to deal with what you do with your computer? When are you going to deal with that loose tongue and using prayer as just a sanctified gossip? When are you going to deal with your giants? When are you going to run straight to them and call it what it is? That's an affront to God, and I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to kill it dead right now, right here today, and do it. And then take your victory stone and walk away from it. When are you going to deal with your giants? your loose tongue, your critical spirit, the grudges you've held, your doubting ways. When are you going to deal with your giant? I say today's the day. Today is the day of victory. Yesterday was the day of victory, but you didn't take it. Today is the day of victory. Stand up to your giant. He's only taunting you, but he's not really taunting you. He's taunting your God. He doesn't think your God can give you victory. But can he? I'll take some nods now. Can he give you victory over the giant in the corner of your life? Can he? Will you let him? Will you win? Will you take the providence that he's given you so far and remember it and claim it and cling to it and say, he will be provident to me now, this day, when I stand against my giant, and then run to him, deal with him, kill him, and be done with him, and walk away with another memento. Thank God I don't have to face that taunting in my conscience anymore. Deal with your giants. Call them what they are. Call sin, sin. Run up to it. Don't be afraid of it. You already have the victory. And kill it today. Pray with me, please. Heavenly Father, you have given us the victory, and we claim victory in your Son, Jesus Christ, David's descendant. And we ask you, Lord, to deliver us from the giants in our lives. We ask you, Lord, to, in your providence, give us the victory. We're sorry, Lord, for the times when we haven't trusted you enough with this, when we haven't been faithful enough or courageous enough to simply take your victory and claim it. So help us. Help us to deal with the sins that so easily entangle. Help us to break free from them and run this race with courage. Amen.